incorporated in the council as has been previously stated. A question further raised was the security of the assets. And if I understand and remember the question, it went about the period now, the run-up to transference, and then afterwards. During the transference, there would be an interim period where the DoD takes responsibility after the bill would have been enacted, and then what happens after that period until arts and culture are in a position to take over? Whose responsibility is that? And we stated that it is the DoD's responsibility until we are sufficiently happy that arts and culture are in a position then to sign off on that. The SNDF currently takes responsibility towards the security of the castle as guard of the colony. That is guard of the perimeter, as well as in the areas where the Castle Control Board has control of museum assets. We have employed staff looking after those assets.
They're being late. It's not because they don't respect this meeting. Sister, it will be better if you come this side, sister, because just to come here so that because I'll be leaving during the middle of the meeting, I've got this economic development meeting as well. So because of this nature and the numbers here, I suppose to hold the fort until that time. We would like to apologize for the chairperson. The chairperson is overseas. She is leading the delegation to Korea. She has been delegated by Parliament to go there. So she requested that I hold the fort. My name is Chris Ntuli, who is going to be the acting chair and who's going to give it to Njikelana to continue to be the acting chair. Comrade Sisa, it would be better if you just come over here instead of her. That's right. It's dark. Why don't you come this side? Yeah, let's join the fall, okay? So let's start with the visual things of introduction, and because you know that this committee is still at we keep on changing. So it will be better if we do the introduction so that when we see each other we don't just say honorable member without knowing who is who. I will start with the committee members. As I said, I'm Chris Ntuli, who's an acting chair. In fact, I'm a whip of this committee. But today, for now, I'm acting and will be given to Sister Njikelana to continue with acting. We've got our content researcher, Marco. And I would like the members just to introduce themselves. We'll start with you, Sister, and go to Mare and Ariko. Thank you.
Member of this committee.
Andriga Sanabesa.
Okay,
because our research has largely because Saroch, the layers, I hope you are coming from the same side. I'll give it to the DJ to lead us. Whoever is the leader of the we'll start with the National Empowerment Fund and Kula.
Thank you. My name is Lisa Lucy, and I'm the Chief Information Officer of the National Empowerment Fund. And then I would like to know my colleagues who are also part of the delegation. In fact, they will be themselves.
Good morning, Chair. Andrew Wright. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the National Empowerment Fund.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Frankel Gillian, Chief Investment Officer of the National Empowerment Fund.
Ronnie Tully, Chairman of the National Empowerment Fund.
Are you related to
Clinton? Both chairmen.
Thank you very much. Can we hear from the Kula?
Okay, good morning, Chair. My name is Sitlakalani Molepo, the Managing Director of Kula Enterprise Finance. And I have got with me our Chief Financial Officer and the Chief Operating Officer. We are still waiting for the Chairperson, the Deputy, and another board member. They will join us now, but I will ask the other people just to say who they are. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, next. Okay, it's fine.
All right, I'm Kulil Mazmogo, Chief Operation of the Met.
So, have you done?
I'm Sasha McDonald, I'm the Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you. Can we start with NEF? I hope we have agreed that we'll be able to try to utilize the 20 minutes available. Then we'll try to give more time for engagement. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members of Parliament. I will try to flip through some of the slides, and you should not be too worried if you see the total number of slides. Some of the slides have been included just for your ease of reference, after the meeting. So I won't be going through each and every slide, and I will actually try to focus on the strategic priorities. In accordance with the guidelines that we have received from the parliamentary liaison officer, Ms. Saroch Naik. Just to give a bit of background once again on the legislative piece that actually gave rise to the establishment of the NEF, I do want to remind the members of parliament that the National Empowerment Fund was established by the NEF, the Fund Act No. 105 of 1998. And the NEF is supposed to be a driver and a thought leader in promoting and facilitating black economic participation through the provision of financial and non-financial support to black entrepreneurs in South Africa. And some of our strategic objectives, which are encapsulated in the NEF Act, the NEF promotes and supports business ventures pioneered and run by black people. We're also supposed to be promoting the understanding of equity ownership and other investments among black people, and also to provide black people with direct and indirect opportunities to acquire share interests in state allocated assets in private business enterprises, and also to encourage and promote investment savings and meaningful economic black participation amongst black people. This is just a historic build-up, which will actually demonstrate to the members of Parliament of how the NEF as an organization has evolved since its inception in 1998. I do want to remind the members of Parliament that, in fact, we only started with our operations in 2005, even though the Act was established in 1998, but we started our operations in 2005. I won't go through each and every aspect of the historic build-up. I just wanted to highlight some of these issues, you know, for your ease of reference, so that you can understand where we have come from as an organization and of where we are today. Slide number 7. These are some of the key milestones that we achieved in the financial year 2009. I'm sure the members of Parliament are aware. We informed them when we had our interaction at the NEF in Johannesburg that we're just about to launch the business plan toolkit, and that our investments to date exceed 1.5 billion rand. And we have now issued the Asongi bonus. We'll be taking you through some of the details around some of these milestones later on in our presentation. And we are in the process of developing and conceptualizing the SMN strategy for black enterprises, because we actually want to differentiate the SMN black strategy from the broader SMN strategy that the government, the DGI, has come up with, because we are of the strong view that when you talk about the black SMEs in particular, you need to actually have some of those differentiators. And then the launch of the mentorship program is also, you will talk about later in the presentation. So when it comes to in the guidelines that we have received from parliamentarians, we're asking us about how the NEF strategy plan or the implementation plan, how has that been linked to the other government priorities and objectives. So this slide seeks to achieve that. Basically what we're saying is that the NEF aims to stimulate sector targeting and economic growth, job creation and wealth creation as a direct product of investment and funding activities. As at the 31st of March 2009, the NEF had provided financing to 160 businesses to the value of 978 million rand. And the critical strategic driver for us in those investment activities has been the fact that the NEF has created, through its investment initiatives, about 5,000 new jobs in the economy. So we actually see that as a direct contributor to the key priorities of government. And I have to also Chairperson underline and highlight the fact that we believe that our jobs that have been created are decent jobs. So we're making a direct contribution towards the economic growth of this country. So the other initiatives, government initiatives that we have looked at as the fund, was the infrastructure development that has been spearheaded by the government to achieve social and economic goals and rural development. Through our mentorship program, the launch of the mentorship program that I spoke about earlier on, the NEF aims to provide skills development and support to the managers, black managers of those businesses, enabling them to create and grow sustainable businesses. And the third objective that relates directly to the government's objective is the fact that our investment products and our investment schemes are actually targeted at promoting investments in the key sectors of the economy. Those would be sectors that we actually identified within the industrial policy framework of the DGI. You'll actually see the spread across the various range of sectors, you know, when we talk about our investments by sector. So we're saying from an industrial policy perspective that even though we are a small fund, that we have actually made some contributions towards the achievement of that particular objective. And then when it comes to the NEF performance and investment criteria, the assessment of impact when we actually do our transactions and projects is not just driven by financial returns, but by the measurement in terms of what we refer to as the empowerment dividend, which is made up as follows. It means in each and every project and transaction that the NEF invests in, we actually look or we assess the broad-based black economic empowerment aspect of the project, which will therefore focus on the ownership aspect, management control, and all the various areas of the broad-based black economic empowerment focus. We look at the black women empowerment component in the transaction, so we'll be actually assessing what percentage has actually been allocated to women in the as the total value of that particular transaction. We look at the job creation aspect of the transaction. We're not just interested or driven by the so-called passive holding investment BEE structures. We actually want to see the active involvement by the black entrepreneurs in the projects that we are supporting. We also look at the growth sectors and whether or not we are investing in the key drivers in the sectors that have been identified as the key drivers in the South African economy. We look at the geographic spread, which means, you know, where are these investments going to be located in the country, and we then look at the investment return. And then when it comes to our key positioning objectives, the NES aims to focus exclusively on providing investment funding to black empowered businesses and wealth creating investment opportunities for black individuals. We want to be experts in investment, and we believe we are experts in investment and funding structures for black empowered businesses, because I'm sure you'll actually agree with me, Chairperson, that as a result of the economic crisis that we have seen, the major reason why most of the BEE transactions are underwater today, that is due to the financing mechanisms and structures that we actually put in place by the banks and by some of the DFIs. So for us, we actually see the financing aspect of our transaction as a key driver for the creation of black economic empowerment value in the economy. We also want to stimulate sector-targeted economic growth, jobs, and wealth creation, and also to act as a warehousing conduit for the transfer of valuable equity allocations. We've seen that in a number of transactions where you find that a black company maybe had bought a stake in a white-owned business. When those black companies want to exit the transaction, at times there would be no buyers in the market. So what the NES is saying is that we actually want to position ourselves to take advantage of those opportunities, to actually acquire the stake of exiting black companies so that you could then pass it on to our broad-based beneficiaries. We also want to ensure broad-based empowerment and sustainable empowerment, to maximize the empowerment dividend that I was talking about earlier on, to create a prudently and effectively managed fund with a time horizon of at least 10 years, and to maintain and grow the capital base of the NES, and therefore to maintain and grow the capital base of BEE enterprises within the South African economy. And just to highlight and illustrate a point, I'm sure the members of Parliament are aware that there was a time when if you were to use the JSE as a proxy, the total value of BEE in the South African economy before the financial crisis was sitting at around 8 or 10%. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I'm sure we'll be at around 2 or 3% once again. So our strategic objective is to actually try and maintain and sustain whatever BEE value that has been created in the South African economy. And also to differentiate against existing business funding offerings. We don't want to crowd out your private banks and your other funders. What we aim to do as a fund is to actually try and identify market failures in terms of the provision of those financing solutions so that there are no overlaps in terms of our mandate and financial product offerings between ourselves, other DFIs, and the banks. Our role is to leverage off additional BEE financing opportunities that are available within the financial services sector. So we don't see them as a competitor, but we believe that we complement each other. Also, to evaluate the effectiveness of black empowerment policy, we do, like for instance, members of parliament are aware that the National Treasury is in the process of reviewing the Preferential Procurement Act. So we believe that since the NEF is there on the ground, that we can actually have a say on how the National Treasury should conceptualize and finalize the Preferential Procurement Act. We're in the process of developing a paper for the National Treasury and for the Department of Trade and Industry on how they should proceed with the implementation of the Preferential Procurement Act. And also to capitalize on our status of being the only gazetted BEE facilitator. So it means if the NEF acquires an equity interest in an established business, that equity interest will be regarded as black equity, and so far we're the only institution that has been gazetted by the government. The NEF manages three separate funds. We have a fund that is called the Imbeu Fund. We also have the Corporate Fund and the Strategic Projects Fund. The Imbeu Fund is a Nguni word for plowing a seed. So basically, in accordance with that definition and description of the Imbeu Fund, what the Imbeu Fund does, it was actually designed to promote the creation of new businesses and the provision of expansion capital to early stage businesses. So we're looking at creating and growing businesses, black businesses within the economy. And the Imbeu Fund also aims to cultivate a culture of entrepreneurship by offering debt, quasi-debt, and equity finance of between 250,000 up to about 20 million rand. So there's a wide range of other products that would actually fall within this. And we also have a fund that is called the Corporate Fund. What the Corporate Fund does, it facilitates the acquisition of equity interest in white-owned businesses by black entrepreneurs. So where a white company would be looking at selling an equity stake, that's where the Corporate Fund would come in. And the last fund is the Strategic Projects Fund, which actually aims to allow black ownership to be considered in some of these strategic projects that we have actually been looking at the NEF. It would be strategic projects like the building, for instance, of some of the aluminium smelters. We're actually saying that when these new industries are established, there's no real opportunity for black people to actually come in and acquire those equity stakes. So what the NES does, if Koha, for instance, had gone ahead, what we could have done, we could have gone in there and acquired at least maybe 2% of Koha, which would then be sold to your broad-based beneficiaries. So by so doing, you'd be allowing this broad-based beneficiary base to also own a stake in one of the emerging countries in the economy. So that's what the strategic project fund was established to. Here we're just highlighting to the Honourable MPs the alignment between our product offerings and our financing instruments and the codes of good practice. It goes back to the point I was raising earlier on where I was saying that our financing instruments are actually aimed at addressing specific market failures from a financing and BEE environment. So we'll actually see that as we go through the BEE scorecard, that each and every aspect of that scorecard has actually been covered by our product offerings. Whether you're talking about ownership, there would be financing instruments, in fact, a wide range of financing instruments, the management control, employment, equity, skills development, preferential procurement, for instance. What we did around the development of that particular product, we're saying we want to align our product offering to other government objectives. So there's the Preferential Procurement Act. We wanted to make sure that there would be a financing instrument that would support that specific objective of government. So we have also now developed a procurement funding product. We also have a franchising financing product, and I won't take you through all the different types of products. And this is how our current pipeline looks like. As at 31st March 2009, the NEF had concluded about 160 transactions that are worth $978 million. And the total work in progress was 1.077 billion rand. And at here, we just wanted to cover the period between March 2009 and 30th of September 2009. Just between March and September. Of this year, the NEF had concluded. We had concluded another 25 transactions that are worth 500 million rand. And if you were to add the additional 500 million rand to the previous pipeline, it takes our approved value of transactions to about 1.6 billion rand as of the 30th of September 2009. This slide basically highlights how the NEF has attempted to ramp up its activities between 2005 and 2009. You see that as at March 2005, the NEF had only concluded about 11 transactions that were worth about 25 million rand, and today we're sitting at about 1.6 billion rand. And this is how the pie chart looks like in terms of the portfolio by sector and by value. But the pie chart as well is a reflection of how the NEF seeks to invest in the sectors that have been identified as the key drivers of growth by the AI and the government. You see that most of our funding has 14% has gone into manufacturing. ICT was sitting at about 11%. Construction and materials is another 17%, and transportation 13.4%. This is in the guideline we received also from the members of parliament. It says we must actually highlight the challenges that we are faced with in terms of providing those financing solutions for the implementation of broad-based black economic empowerment. You see that most of our funding, about 61%, has actually gone to housing, and we are trying to address this particular challenge through quite a number of incentives, programs and initiatives that we have spearheaded from our side, but we are doing it in partnership with the provinces. The fact I do want to highlight here is that you can't actually achieve what we're trying to achieve in the provinces if you don't come up with a strategic alliance with the various government departments of economic development and finance. So you can't, as the NEF, go alone and invest in the province if there's no real partnership with the provincial government. So what we're trying to do is to actually come up with a program of action where the NEF, where the provincial government departments are responsible for economic development, would actually go out and identify the investment opportunities for us. We are willing to work in partnership with them in terms of scoping and in terms of undertaking the feasibility studies on the ground, but we believe that they are better placed to identify the opportunities, because I'm sure members of parliament will agree that if you invest, you can't invest in a vacuum, and we are intending to do it in partnership with the provincial government. And we are coming up, we'll also be presenting a comprehensive national footprint strategy, where the NEF is now going to be setting up satellite offices in all the provinces. We couldn't do it within the first 4 years since our inception, because we're of the view that we actually wanted to develop capacity, make sure that we had, you know, the IT systems, the infrastructure, and all of those services before we could expand. We believe that because of where the position that we're sitting in as an organization today, that we are well placed to now go and open those provincial offices. These are some of the statistics. Earlier on, the chairperson, I was talking about how we have sought to align our strategic plan with other key priorities of government. And we said that one of those is around job creation. It just shows the number of jobs that have been created as a result of our investment activities. The next slides are talking about some of the initiatives that we have had to put in place to try and come up with a response to the current economic crisis. I won't take you through each and every one of them, but maybe if I may just highlight some of those. The members of parliament, for instance, would be aware that the South African credit market, as a result of the current economic crisis, that they have actually become even more risk averse due to concerns around liquidity problems. So basically, they are very reluctant to extend new funding to black enterprises, not just to black enterprises, but to other enterprises as well. We always believe that where there is a crisis, there should be another opportunity that is actually created as a result of that crisis. I was talking earlier on about how the NEF has grown its book just in the first 6 months of this year by 500 million rand. In the first year, we did 500 million rand in the 12 months, but because of the economic crisis, we have actually achieved the 500 million rand mark just in the first 6 months of 2000. So we're actually seeing a real opportunity for the NEF there. But once again, we don't want to do this alone. We are encouraging the banks to share the risk with the NEF. So we want to partner with the commercial banks when we provide our funding. And the NEF, all of a sudden, we believe, is now regarded as a preferred source of funding for SMEs and for black SMEs and BEEs. I've spoken about how we have achieved the 500 million rand mark. And the NEF has actually considered quite a number of distressed BEE transactions. Earlier on, I was highlighting the fact that most of these BEE transactions are underwater. We have actually looked at some of them, and we have approved funding of 50 million that was approved to actually support a company that's called Sunfree. I believe that the chairperson is attending a conference. I don't know where the conference is taking place. So we are playing a role in one of the critical sectors of the economy. And the next slide is talking about some of the NEF market interventions. I have already said that the NEF has conceptualized a business planning toolkit, and the reason why we had to come up with the toolkit, it was because we were trying to address quite a number of market failures, one of those being the lack of access to market that some of these black times with limited management skills, including financial, marketing, and technical expertise, and there's no access to affordable capital. So we believe that through this initiative that we should be in a position to ramp up our activities at the approval stage. We also have come up with a mentorship program for our investee companies. We have also come up with a debt restructuring program. I won't take you through each and every feature of that program, but it just shows how the NES has restructured its investee portfolio to try and address the market failures that have come about as a result of the macroeconomic crisis. These are some of the key insights gained and the lessons learned. It's just for your information. I won't go through each and every one of them. I have already spoken about our preference for funding black enterprises who are going to be operationally involved in the businesses who have seen the failure of the so-called investment holding BEE structures, especially in this economic crisis. So I won't take you through each and every one of those. And then I'll hand over to my colleague for the next slide. Thank you.
So, approximately how many minutes is it going to take? Because I thought you were...
Fine.
Oh.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. I'm going to just touch on the other key division of the NES, which is the Asset Management Division. The next slide just unpacks the Strategic Project Fund, which the CEO did mention earlier in the presentation, but this gives you the specific criteria and focus of that Strategic Project Fund as well. And there are a couple of case study examples in the back of the pack that the members can peruse, and we're happy to take further questions on Strategic Project Fund. But under the objectives of the NES, the members will recall that there is a group of objectives that talk to savings and investment activity and promoting equity ownership amongst our beneficiaries. And the Asset Management Division was set up specifically to target that in terms of promoting the understanding of equity ownership and providing opportunities to participate in state-owned enterprise share allocations. And specifically, out of a number of mentions in Cabinet memorandums, the NES drew upon a schedule of state-owned assets with regard to targeting those for transfer to the NES, in turn developing retail products for distribution to the beneficiaries of the NES. We provided a scenario snapshot of status in that regard to the members. We've been doing this continuously with the members to keep them appraised of how we're progressing with these transfers, and members would be aware in their own corridors as well with regards to initiatives that the NES has taken to try and achieve the transfer of the remainder of the assets. At this stage, we've made some progress with SAFCO, and we hope to have that transferred to the NES in the course of this financial year. The Gidani allocation has also been successfully secured, and the progress has been transferred as well. Unfortunately, the other targeted assets being Telkom, we still are trying to identify, you know, the key information required to facilitate that transfer. And in that regard, we are working with the ministers and the respective government departments. Recently, the members would have seen in the media, we had a bonus share offer and release that went out to any of the Songa shareholders. The Songa shareholders actually achieved significant returns over the 2 years of their investment, in excess of 60% of return on their investment in Songa, which is based on the MTN share. And we're also happy to announce that a total of just in excess of 82,000 members of our Songa share scheme received an additional bonus shares on the 29th of September of this year. We provided a profile of how those bonus shares were offered for the members to consider as well. We do regard the Asonga share scheme as quite a milestone in broad-based ownership scheme for black shareholders. Going forward, the asset management team is tasked with developing new products aimed at accessible subscription levels, which we've now learned out of the Asonga share scheme. So we've got key information against which to design new offers and to continually make them accessible at all geographical regions for potential beneficiaries to subscribe on the particular offers. We're targeting an investor education campaign at the moment, so members will see the NEF in all provinces, achieving around about 74 investor education workshops around the country over the space of the next 12 months. There's considerations internally, and we're commissioning research at the moment, the establishment of an enterprise development fund, which has got potential to unlock huge amounts of capital from the private sector under the enterprise development element of the Code of Good Practice. We're also working in the retail sector, the key sector that's lagged behind in terms of economic transformation. And there's a lot of work going into the development of a product that's really for consideration amongst the retailers themselves to assist with equity participation in the retail chain store ownership scheme. I'd like to just in 2 minutes just flag to the members a couple of key economic, couple of key financial indicators rather, so that you can just conceptualize how big the NEF is and how we're doing financially. We've grown into an organization of an asset value of 4.6 billion. And in fact, as we sit today, with the turnaround in the markets and especially the MTN share price movement, we're now in excess of a 5 billion rand fund. And that's largely represented by the appreciation of our share portfolio, as well as the capitalization that's flowed through to the NEF as a result of the DTI and the National Treasury. Our cash balances have been largely fully committed against our investment pipeline, we're happy to announce, and we're also working very closely with National Treasury with regard to securing our accumulated funds for additional investment activity in the next 18 to 24 months, and we hope to get that approval by the end of this calendar year. We also would like to announce to the members that the NEF was able to sustain itself last year without any funding from the Department of Trade and Industry for Operations. So we basically covered our own costs using our financing income. On our loan disbursement portfolio, the CEO mentioned some of the statistics with regards to our disbursement. And one of our key indicators that we track is how our disbursement and investment portfolio is performing, relatively speaking, to the economic downturn, the risks associated with those investments. And last year, we were able to report what we call an impairment ratio, which really colloquially is a bad debt provision, in the order of 19% last year. Understandably, that has increased over this financial year, now just short of 24%. We monitor that very, very closely, and using various non-financial support initiatives, try and actively manage that downwards and contain it within that low 20s environment. And members, we'd also like to highlight that based on our capitalization that we have on balance sheet at the moment, we will essentially, as a fund, and based on our investment targets, be fully invested in the next 18 to 24 months. And it's very key as an organization now that we consider new lines and access points to capital to continue the sustainability of the organization, but also increase the investment activity beyond the 18 to 24 months mark. So essentially, this slide demonstrates how that investment activity is projected over the next 18 to 24 months. And we're working very closely with National Treasury and DTI as well with regards to making sure that we have adequate new sources of capital already targeted at this point in time so that we can then start positioning ourselves well in advance of that point of time in 18 to 24 months' time. The balance of the slides are appendices for detailed information, and I'm sure we'll take questions on that. And thank you for that, Chair. And that will be the conclusion of our submission. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your input, I suppose it's time for questions now. Honorable Marie, Honorable Ambrosini, Honorable Banabasi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is obviously just to slightly understand better what we are dealing with and what they should evaluate. And that is, first of all, the objectives and targets that has been set for loan disbursements, which is obviously what the money that flows into the economy and that stimulates the on a broad base. And then secondly, also your loan impairment provisions, and I mean, I interpret that as provisions for bad debt. I don't know if I'm correct, so that's probably just a fancy way of putting provisions for bad debt, or where there's loans that is not managed properly. Now, on that basis, I obviously want to evaluate the performance of the NEF. And if I look at the annual statements, we will see that the NEF has spent a considerable lot of money on staff. I see, for instance, that the CEO has earned nearly 3.6 million, of which 1.4 million was a bonus. I see that the COO that has been appointed on the 1st of March has earned a bonus of 192,000 for the month and a salary of 93,000, so that's 300,000 for the year, for the month, which equates to short of 3.6 million for the year. I'm not quite sure how to interpret bonuses. Bonuses is normally something that you get for performance. And it also says here bonuses and performance payments. So somehow I want to relate the bonuses, especially that has been paid, to obviously performance. And for that we need to say, okay, what was the objectives? What was the targets? How did we perform? And if my loan impairment provision calculation of the loan disbursement is correct, then we're running at 36.2%, which is quite substantial in my opinion. And that means that, you know, you're going to write off quite a lot of money. And then obviously you look at the bonuses paid. I think that is my first and very important question, and maybe some will follow from that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One comment to elicit a counter comment and one direct question with your leave. We have seen part of this presentation when we were in Johannesburg in the NEF offices. I think it was important to go through it again so that we have now digested, and also for the benefit of the media, which is no longer here. But what I've gathered is that the NEF is a class action. It's a class operation. Very competent people, it runs properly, but my impression is that it is, in terms of costing of the operation, very top heavy. As colleague Malik was pointing out, there is a huge amount of payment in salaries, infrastructure, which is comparably higher than one would expect from a strategic venture capital fund, which is what this entity is, with a specific purpose that is not different from strategic and venture capital funds around the world. So I look at this entity and how it operates and how it goes within the overall scheme of all the entities which are dealing with the same problem. And I have a problem which I will voice also in respect of Kula, that the cost of administering them all, it's enormous. If one steps back, the rational thing to do would be to put them all together. Kula will give us a presentation asking us for 1.7 billion rands to go the rate. ABS effectively is operating the rate. So the question that I put to the ABS, from their point of view, considering that they are a class action and perhaps they are better action than other entities, if one looks at all the other entities which are dealing with the same funding of non-commercial transactions with exclusions of the IDC, which is on the higher level, what would be the problem, from your viewpoint, in aggregating everything in one entity with a nice little merger which utilizes your great capacity, staff, and resources to drive this process? Because it's costing a lot. And that's the first comment dash question. The other one, which is much shorter. You're in the business of taking risks that other people don't take. So we must know as a government that your bad debts are going to be worse than other bad debts, and they're bound to be larger and longer. I mean, they're going to be larger and longer to turn around if they can be turned around. It seems to me that you're not covered for what we are going through, and correct me if I'm wrong, and you should have not been covered because what we're going through is extraordinary. Is there any way that we can identify, if the crisis is gone, as I think it will for another couple of years, what type of bill will the government end up having to pick up if the bad debts increase at the same rate as they have in the past 9 months?
Thank you, Chief. Actually, I want to congratulate the senior management of the NES for especially what we've heard this morning and the good report that they got from the auditors as well. My first question doesn't deal with the NEF, but more with the remark part with the lady. And that part, if I understood it correctly, that she said that before the financial crisis, the black ownership on the JSE was between 8-10%, but now it is estimated to be 2%. I hope I heard her wrong. If she could just explain to me what I should have understood there. Then secondly, I want to know, there are so many professional asset management firms that are competing in a highly competitive environment. Why is it that the EDF family does their own management of their investments? And then also as to the 24% loan write-offs, I had that on my list as well. But then lastly, we've got this wonderful report, and we see many figures and graphs going up. But to me, it is still impossible to deduct whether the NEF had a good year or not. What were their successes, and what were their problems that they experienced in that year? Yes, I know they are being entrusted with more and more money, and as more and more shares are being allocated for black economic empowerment. Obviously, even if the NEF is not running a good operation, the asset base and the money flowing through their books must have been increasing tremendously. So still, that doesn't give me an idea of the quality of the management and of the performance of the NEF. So if they could tell me, how can I measure that? And then lastly, they are also assisting entrepreneurs with loans, etc. We have a number of entities in this country, and we're going to listen to another group of the DTI that also makes money available for entrepreneurs. Where does the NEF see themselves, and how do they differ from the other institutions in terms of the type of financing that they make available? Thank you.
Over to
now out of control of that was the Honorable Rudy took my judgment. But just on a few things before my judgment comes in. One is you made reference to a new business plan toolkit. Now my assumption is that there are a number of business plan toolkits, not even outside TI, even within the code. The first thing that came into my mind, why a new one? How is it going to be different to those, for instance, that the IDC that the data that if also you could just go a little bit into detail for now, even if it's verbal on your loan right off. Just one area of concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. I will respond to some of the questions and then I will request my colleagues to also come in and ask. Maybe if I may just respond to the question that was raised by Honorable Member Murray on what our objectives and targets were at the beginning of the financial year that we are looking at. I think Honorable MP Murray, it's a number of objectives that we consider when we assess the performance of the National Empowerment Fund. The loan impairment provision will just be one of them. But if I may just take the members of parliament through some of those initiatives, you would actually start by, remember that the National Empowerment Fund is a new fund that only came about only about 4 years ago. So one of the things you would assess if you're looking at the performance and the successes of the fund, you'd be looking at whether or not we have actually been able to create a credible private equity or a venture capital black-owned private equity fund. And we believe that we've come a long way, that if we were to look at how we have now set up our systems, the infrastructure, and the caliber of the employees that we have actually brought into the organization, we're actually very confident to report that the NEF in a few years' time is going to be able to compete with any of the white-owned private equity or venture capital funds. And it also talks to the types of remuneration packages that you look at, but you can only address that issue if you look at the type of business that the NEF is in. I'm actually convinced that you'd actually rank the NEF with any of these private equity funds like Bright Capital, even though Bright will be investing in both black-owned and white-owned businesses. It would be Bright, it would be Active, and even the IDC. What that means is that the pool of employees and the pool of professionals that you're going to be looking at, that they need to come from those types of organizations. So there's no way the NEF can operate in that particular space, which is actually part of our mandate, and for us to say that the NEF cannot go and recruit from the likes of the IGC and from the likes of Investec. And so that's the caliber of professionals that you're going to be looking at. You are looking at black chartered accountants. I'm just giving that as an example. You will not say that just because the fund is a black fund that you are looking for a lesser chartered accountant. The fact of the matter is because of the types of instruments that we are looking at, we do have to hire CAs. We we do need to get professionals with a lot of corporate finance experience, and we're drawing them from the commercial banks and from other private equity funds as well. So I'm just trying to explain the rationale for actually structuring our remuneration packages in that way. And I'm sure the members will also agree that there's actually a shortage of those particular skills in the economy at the moment. You know, it's very, very difficult to actually get those types of professionals in the market. So that's the space that the NEF operates within, and we had to align ourselves with, you know, what other players in the market are also doing. So on the objectives and targets, what we normally do, I think it happens at around March, because I don't have those, I don't know if my colleagues will be able to pull them out here in, you know, from the system, because we actually have, we enter into a compact with our key stakeholder, in this instance, the DTI, and in that shareholder compact, it will actually highlight and it sets out what the expected objectives and targets for that particular year are. So it's clearly defined by volume. It will say how many deals, how many projects are we supposed to conclude, to have approved and to have dispersed, by what time of the year. It will talk about other non-financial support initiatives that the NEF would be looking at. It's, I can share that document with the members of parliament if they are keen to see it. So our objectives are clearly defined in that shareholder compact. So if you were to go into the shareholder compact itself, you'd actually see that we believe that despite the current macroeconomic crisis, that we have actually achieved most of the objectives and targets that were set out in the compact. So the loan impairment provision is just one of the considerations that we need to be looking at, but it's not the only determinant of whether or not the NEF has had, you know, any successes or not. And then I'd like to go to my colleague, the CFO, will talk about the calculation of the loan disbursement, so I won't deal with that. The Honourable Member Ambrosini was raising the issue around the possibility of maybe coming up with a measure of, I think you were saying measure of NEF cooler, and if I understood him correctly. I think if you go back to the slide that was talking about the NEF key positioning, the Honourable Member Ambrosini will actually see that there are very clear differentiators between what the NEF is seeking to achieve and what cooler does. The NEF is not just focusing on the SME sector. The SME sector, the black, in fact, is the black SME sector, is just one of the areas that we have to look into. But in addition to the SME sector, is the whole BEE, the broad-based BEE landscape. Because if we were to just focus on the SME sector and not cover the other sectors, there would be a serious market failure there. So far, I'm not aware of a DFI that is actually conceptualizing, especially when you talk about some of the retail offerings that we have come up with. And also, if we were to look at the role of the NEF as being the custodian of the state allocated assets, and there was a particular reason, you know, why those assets were allocated to the NEF, and we believe that to a great extent, we have actually achieved most of the, you know, initial objectives. But also, I think in the whole country, we are the only DFI that has been given the BEE facilitator status, and it has been gazetted. And we believe that if we were to move the NEF in Lake Atlantis with another organization that it would actually dilute or negate some of the broad-based black economic empowerment objectives, because you'd actually just lose it somewhere in the system. Whereas for now, we're well positioned in terms of saying we are the only agency that focuses exclusively on the provision of financing solutions to black enterprises. Frenzel will respond on what the Honourable Member was raising around other strategic equity funds and private equity funds and the role of those entities and venture capital funds. And Honourable Member Van der Weyden, he was raising the issue that I was raising around the implementation of broad-based black economic empowerment in the economy and the effect that the economic crisis has had on the DEE landscape in general. Honourable Member, what I was just raising there is the fact that most of the DEE deals that were concluded over a period of time have actually shed, you know, some days as a result of the financial crisis, because you'll find that most of those transactions were actually concluded when we were in an economic expansionary phase in the country, and all of a sudden the whole economy basically shed a lot of value, and as a result it took a lot of those BEE deals down as well. So you lost a lot of value in those BEE transactions as a result of the shedding of value by the companies in which those BEE companies had invested. So I'm saying it has to do with the valuation of the stocks and the valuation of the shares in which those BEE transactions, in which those BEE entrepreneurs had invested. So I said I'm very certain about the number that about early last year, that if you were to assess the total value of BEE transaction by market cap in the JSE, that we were sitting at around 9%. So if you look at the number and the values of those transactions that have been affected by the current economic situation, I'm saying that number should be probably sitting at about maybe 3%. But I haven't verified that number. This is what I said earlier on. And we'll talk about the loan write-off, the successes of the NEF. I have actually spoken about how we assess our performance around a wide range of issues, the creation of jobs, the volume and value of our investments, the involvement of black women in BEE transactions, and I also said it has to talk to the systems, the processes that the NEF has put in place to actually deliver on its mandate. And the last question from Honourable Member Njikelana, you were asking about the business plan toolkit. Honourable MP, I don't think there will ever be a time in this country where, insofar as trying to address the economic injustices of the past, we will say this is more than enough. Whatever you've got in the economy is more than enough. I think we are all starting with some of these initiatives. A lot of black people were never exposed to just owning and managing enterprises. So in fact, we would actually want to welcome even the private sector to come up with similar initiatives. So I think there's a clear demand and a clear need for the types of services and product offerings that we have come up with. And maybe to illustrate the point, our marketing officer will give you the type of numbers that we have actually seen on our website, because if there was no need or no demand, people would not even be accessing our toolkit. So we're saying our toolkit is there to address a specific purpose and a specific market failure in the economy, in that in general, a lot of black people didn't actually have the type of skills that are required, you know, in terms of putting up bankable business plans. That's why most of their business plans will be rejected by the financial institutions. And in fact, they are now using those business plans to try and access funding from other organizations. It's not even to just access our funding opportunities only, but they can go to Standard Bank. So what the business plan toolkit is going to do is going to assist in terms of leveraging additional funding from the financial institutions, because we need to understand why are the banks refusing to fund some of these black enterprises, even when they actually have a good business case to present. So I'll ask my colleagues to respond to this.
Thanks very much, honourable members of the chair. I think I'm going to take the departure point of then looking at organisational performance from an internal perspective, and specifically around the quantitative side of things. CEO has spoken about how we measure organisational performance in terms of impact and quantitative aspects, as well as targets of contracts that we enter with the DGI and with our staff members themselves in terms of implementing that. But when we evaluate the performance of the organisation at the end of the year, taking all of that into consideration, we focus from a segmental reporting perspective. And we've got four key segments in the organisation that we look at operationally in terms of performance. There's the fund management segment, which really relates to a lot of the discussion we've had this morning and relays a lot of the qualitative targets that we're looking for in terms of impact into the economy and financing in the BE sector. That's the first. The second is in the asset management environment, where we have a shared portfolio that is transferred to us from the state and which we then are custodians of in terms of not only monitoring and managing, but in terms of developing retail products as well. The third is in terms of our cash portfolio, and that talks about our treasury operations environment. And finally, our operational environment, we have a look at in terms of it's literally overhead, you know, versus budget and versus other income sources that we generate. So we look at those in a disaggregated way as well as in an aggregate way. And what you'll see the NES is starting to develop, and in fact, as I mentioned in my presentation, has developed in leading up to March 2009, is the ability to sustain itself on the basis of an aggregate approach. So it obviously looks at the relative performance of each contributing to the whole, and that the whole is able to sustain itself. Now, in developing that financial measure, we have to consider that the organization has to continually, as the Honorable Member Brittany said, have the ability to take on risk. If we had to operate this organization as a bank, absolutely 24% is too high in impairment provision for the fund management division segment. It's not sustainable from a private sector perspective. Your private sector banks tend to operate in the 2-3% impairment environment, specifically around the commercial lending operation. So it's essential that the organization as a whole has the ability to continue to absorb risk. And one of the key exercises we do as an organization is continually monitor at a monetary value the ability of the organization to take on risk in terms of rand value against its operational financial performance. All right. So if we quickly unpack the performance of each operational segment, talking about fund management, and that'll link into the comments around the impairment provision. We've monitored the impairment provision not only internally at Philadelphia, but we've also monitored against peers in the DFI environment and obviously peers in the private sector as well. And in private sector, we look at the one extreme of your pure commercial bank, and then the other extreme of your what we term quasi-DFI, but it's a private sector environment such as your business partners environment, which tends to take on a little bit more risk than what your pure private sector lender takes on. So we benchmark our activities against that, against our peers, and definitely picked up, and you may have already picked up from IDP presentations, I'm not certain of this, but you'll be picking up the trend on the DFIs from an impairment perspective. There's definitely a movement upwards in terms of overall impairments being reported. We've seen it being reported in the private sector from the banking perspective. But your DFI and impairment provisions will be creeping north as well. So from a performance perspective, we were 19 last year, we were 24% this year. In terms of trying to anticipate what the total effect of the economic downturn will be on our overall performance from an impairment perspective, we look at other indicators internally in terms of operational indicators such as loan repayments against installments. It is one of your key red flags that contributes towards your year-end provisions of impairment. And to answer the question, yes, impairment is an accounting term for a bad debt provision, ultimately. But it's based on a fair value model, so it's a little bit more intricate than just taking a pure estimate of 5 or 10% of your book debt like we used to do in inverted commas and all that. So there is an indication that the impairment provision will creep up towards the March 2010 reporting time as well. I can't put a number to it right now, but the other indicators inside the organisation are demonstrating that there are distressed companies in the portfolio. And as the CEO has said, we've taken various steps to try and mitigate the effect of that distressed company into the overall results of the organisation coming up to March 2010 to try and rescue those organisations that are in trouble and obviously get on top of trying to turn around the other companies. From an asset management segment perspective, we clearly stated that one of the biggest contributors towards our capitalization up till now has been the performance of the Asonge share scheme offer that was offered into the market. And that recovered quite a significant windfall return for the NES, albeit huge value was transferred onto the beneficiaries. 1.2 billion rand worth of shares were essentially transferred to 83,000 investors. Of that 1.2 billion rand, it appreciated by 60-odd% over 2 years, up until the 29th. Plus, a further 140-odd million rand in bonus shares were awarded to these investors. So if you look at it from a performance perspective, asset management has yielded not only internal performance, but significant external performance to the beneficiaries and investors within their partnerships. At a treasury operations level, actively managing the cash portfolio within the constraints of the PSMA led to an effective investment return just short of 12% last year for reporting March 2009. And that's quite an effective cash return for any fund over that period of time, albeit in a high interest environment, actively managing cash within constraints of PSMA. And finally, Chair, from an operations perspective, we've discussed a lot of terms of relative size of operations, overhead, you know, versus the type of organization that we are. From a cost to asset base perspective, we're operating in a 2% environment. So in terms of overhead versus cost of funds under management, we're well within industry norms of what it takes to run a fund generally in the private sector. However, we have to go quite a few steps more in terms of going the extra mile to understand investment risk when we disburse transactions. In other words, we have to spend more time and money on overhead in evaluating transactions because of the risk environment we face. So in fact, I think from an operations overhead perspective, the fund is performing in terms of its total versus funds under management. And we, in fact, sustained ourselves, as I mentioned last year, for the first time in the NEA slide. It did not rely on any transfers from the DTI to cover its overhead. It covered its overhead from the financing income out of its loans book as well as its treasury operations perspective. I'd be happy to, outside of the meeting, possibly just discuss with Honourable Marie with regards to the percentages and the calculations of 36s and 24s and the like, so I don't want to possibly deal with that in this session, if I may. And from an outsourcing versus insourcing perspective, the question that Honourable Van Vest has asked was with respect to is. I just want to talk very quickly on this from a treasury operations perspective. We definitely don't try and do it all in-house in the sense of give opportunity to professionals. sector, where part of our cash portfolio may very well be offered to external asset management entities. And friends, I think we'll talk about other initiatives in that regard. Thank you very much.
Can I have a follow-up question if you would?
Just a moment, Tim still wants to have a go and answer.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to be speaking about the role of the private equity funds and insourcing or outsourcing in terms of the NEF, outsourcing some part of these business to perhaps private equity funds. Just by way of background, the private equity industry in South Africa is a well-developed industry if you compare it to other markets like Israel and so forth. I think they manage about $80 billion in funds under management. And essentially the way the model works is that they raise funds on behalf of investors to invest in specific types of opportunities for a fee and a portion of profits. And the reason I mention that is that unfortunately, the model in South Africa tends to focus more on, less risky investments, larger transactions that perhaps doesn't have the same economic impact and development impact. But it's focused more on having a safe portfolio that one could, report back to your investors as such. So at the NEF, we've got a very specific mandate. We believe that our target market is looking for risk finance, and at times that the return risk-reward relationship is not purely commercial. It's really looking at the strategic objectives of the country and how the NEF can actually make a contribution. So we believe it's very important for the NEF to have that internal capacity to be able to manage the funds in terms of the investment activity. Andrew spoke about the asset management side and the treasury side, which he spoke about there, considering other options. But we do believe that for the NEF to be successful and to live on its mandate sustainably, it's important for us to actually have that capacity. We invest from about 250,000 rand to 100 million, so it's a very diverse market. We're looking at about 100 applications a month that we have to assess. Many of them, does not necessarily meet the criteria for funding, but the NEF still looks at them, still provides feedback to funders, and that also explains why we came up with the business plan concept. If I contrast that to the private equity model, it's really looking at, low volume of deals, very sort of, lower risk transactions. And as I say, for the NEF, what we try to do is marry developmental objectives with commercial objectives, and I think it's a very interesting and a very unique, offering that we do offer to the market. Thank you, Chair.
Part of the NEF team. Oh, excuse me, Honourable.
Just lastly, with regards to the comment relating the business plan toolkit. We will confirm, as the CEO has said, that there indeed has been phenomenal public response and demand to usage of the business plan toolkit. Within the first 2 months of its launch since August this year, there have been well over 3,000 registered users on the website, so people wanting to use the NEF's business plan toolkit. Thank you.
Honourable, I think we need to test this toolkit. I'm still skeptic. I feel that the toolkit is the best. Sorry to provoke you. but it's good. Let's go into the other side and check on it. People were running behind time. We've got cooler as well. I've noted the hands. I hope the hands are follow-ups. I would rather that I even suppress myself, because when I got my document back, I had actually 300% of the questions for NEF. So I would rather we'll write them down and send them over. Let's just allow questions for follow-up, and then we have a tea.
Thank you, yes. Chair.
Could I
just one thing? Follow-up.
Yes. Okay.
No, I wanted to indicate just so that the meeting must not take it as, you just see a person coming very
bib next to you has explained that. Yes, we know we are very conscientious. In fact, we've got passion. That's why I didn't even mention anything about you, because we know you're passionate about our work. Honorable, let's just go for the follow-up and then quick responses, and then we break for tea.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I must ask the NEF if they can write, maybe respond now or eventually send to us maybe more qualitative responses. The CFO has given the four issues that they are measured against. I would like to know, you know, the targets that they have set and how they have decided on those targets, and then obviously compared to the performance. Because what we see, and I don't dispute the fact that you need competent people, that you need to properly pay them. And that's why, you know, increases like 9.5% and even 19.5% in basic salary to the CFO, you know, one can probably justify and argue. But what I am not quite sure about, and that is the bonuses and performance payments, increases of 19.2%, 23%, that sounds in quite excessive to me. So without knowing the targets that they have set, how did they arrive at those targets, and then comparing the performance to that, it is impossible to say, you know, I think you have done fairly well, because I don't know that. I mean, I've heard the motivations, I've heard the responses. That doesn't give me any clear answer on the justification for excessive bonuses, in my opinion. Thank you, sir.
Just a quickie on that. I think rather let's have it part of the written question. Honorable Ambrosini?
Right. Now, we often ask for documentation. I think that what we are doing is very good, that we are asking for questions to be replied later in good order. But I really would like to impress on the chair to, because I often ask for documents and from other committees, there is no reply. Just two questions, again, for written reply. The one, I would like the argument given by the CEO, if it can be put in writing, because I tried to listen carefully and I couldn't follow it.
Honorable Lambertini, can you save that if you could just scribble it in writing? If you don't mind, scribble it in writing. Ms. Helling will facilitate the question for us.
Well, I will write it down rather than scribbling it, but I want just to explain the difficulty, because I will put the question again. I don't want to have the same answer. The question is, why not the merger? And I heard the CEO saying, we do A and B. Cool, I'll see that they only do A, and therefore we do more, and we shouldn't merge. And that was the first part of her answer. The second part of her answer was, we still do A and B. By doing more of A, the B gets diluted, and that doesn't really work with our status. Again, I did not understand the logic of these two statements, so I will put the question again in a more articulate way, and perhaps I will get an answer more comprehensible to me. Then the second question, the statement was made that in order to manage the fund, the salary must be paid on the established management funds. So I would like to have just a comparison with the salary paid in comparable position on the First Rand Merchant Bank, in Investec, Absa, and on Mutual at least, so that we can satisfy that we've done our due diligence on this issue, which has been controversial. Sorry, on that one, both in terms of salary and bonuses for this year.
Fine, thanks very much. I'm sorry, guys. I think it's fine if things are going to be responded to in writing, unless there's really one point you would like to run as a response to. Quickie.
Thank you very much, Chair and members. I think the first point I'd really like to just
say thank you to members for recognition of the evolution and stability and growth and the work of the National Empowerment Fund. I think a number of members have stated that. This issue of salaries and bonuses, I think we as, just to express as chairman of the National Empowerment Fund, we as a board have interrogated this quite extensively in the context of what we're trying to do as an organization vis-a-vis the mandate of the National Empowerment Fund. It is our very honest view that we're very prudent with the level of remuneration at the fund, whether we compare it to other organizations or in the context of the mandate and the achievements made by the fund. But I will take it upon myself personally to give a written response of what is the work that we have done, what have been the objectives, what have been the targets, and how are we performing vis-a-vis those targets in the context of what the NEF is mandated to do. So to all the honorable members that have dwelled on that question, I will take it upon myself to deliver those answers in writing. On the issue of the merger, you know, we can't, it's not for the National Empowerment Fund to say...
Can I say this is trouble? Okay. I wanted to answer that. Can I say this is trouble? I think the entities within COTI, almost all of them are, or 99.9% of them are legislated at the legislation. Mm-hmm. And the very people are sitting here responsible for that legislation. If you want to mess them, it's our own baby. If you want to mess them, it's DTI and us. And much as we can still provoke you with that question, that tell us from time to time, should there be any call for you to continue existing? There's nothing wrong with that. But I trust and hope also we'll concede that at the end of the day, it's also our ultimate and ultimate responsibility that we take the final decision of your continued separate or merge or whatever existence. We are quite aware of the overlaps, and one of them was indicated on the screen, overlaps with the cooler. But if you remember, we have been consistent and persistent, even in this small part of the fourth term, and particularly in the third term, that we want to see a very strong intra-county coordination, because part of that would actually to address the overlaps. And if you work as a team, you will be able to see, look, what do we do with the overlap? Do we either shift it to, you know, Kula, or do we shift it to IDC, or do we shift it to NEF? You know? And would like, I mean, I must say very confidently on behalf of all the members, we really not like, we expect to hear that down the line, that part of the reporting, you know, within this term, you know, you can proudly come back, any of the COTI members think that, you know, in terms of this and that overlap, this is what has been done. Of course, there is sensitivity as well on this issue of salary packages, but I'm sure I can persuade the honorable members as well that we need to take up this matter in a holistic manner, because while dealing with NEF today, you know, we have COTI members that in three, we've got, they run into hundreds when we link up with other departments. And it would be helpful that we handle that, not on a piecemeal basis. Before I get excited, because I'm itching, but I'm going to suppress myself, Ms. Helling will coordinate all the questions. Should any other honorable members be keen to work out? But also, just as a comment, I think this also signals that whilst we may be having a pretty heavy schedule, definitely down the line, Ms. Naidu, we need to creatively look for another slot for NEF, and let's persuade the chair of the committee for that. You know, NEF has not been clear. I mean, I speak out of experience now compared to other men. We have not been that clear as to what you need to do, how you work, your performance. But now, I mean, from 2005, you know, a couple of achievements are beginning to emerge, and as a result, obviously now we're beginning to get, if I can use this language, excited, you know, we'll probe a little bit more. So it also could be helpful that we go an extra mile to give ourselves as committee members space to allow you to come back and interact more comprehensively with us. I'm sure you'll see in the questions that we have, and even compared to the questions we may have been asking in the past, you know. Thanks very much for now. Can we break for tea? 10 minutes.
Thank you. Honorable, can you settle, please?
Now, Kula. Let us welcome the team from Kula. I hope everybody is in and settled, otherwise they'll join us on the way. Time is not much on our side, so rather let us take around and let kick off, they'll join us on the way. Thank you. So over to you now.
Well, good morning to you, Chair, and the honorable members of this portfolio. I just want to also mention the fact that we have our chairperson, Mrs. Nomonde Mateta, available together with her deputy, Mr. Tembeni Mkize, and the chairperson of our Audit and Risk Committee, Mr. Ishmael Tayob. Firstly, even before I go into my presentation, I think it is very important.
Excuse me, where are they? We don't see them.
But can I ask them just to introduce themselves through this, because they are the other.
To give you proper support, not remote, not support by remote.
You can join the talk. We see the seats that have been vacated by NEF. We'll do it.
Fine. Okay, if you allow me, then let me continue. And I think it is also important for me to really pay special tribute to the board, which were there during the time that we are reporting on. My predecessor, Mr. Solapitole, and the executive team, I think for me having taken over on a sound footing, I think that is very, very important for me to mention. This morning, we want to go through the contents as you can see them on the screen, and we'll try and make sure that we go through them as quickly as we can. Obviously, the members received some pack, and we are also, I think, conscious of the fact that earlier this year, we came through where we managed to go into detail about what Kula's mandate is, what its role, and what are the products that they offer, and so on. Now, Kula's mandate, the three key focus areas of our mandate as a wholesale fund financier are that, one, it is really about the development impact. We need to ensure that we create jobs. We need to ensure that we support SMEs that are black-owned. The rural development is very important for us, and of course, women empowerment. The other leg is the issue of ensuring that we continuously improve on the financing, you know, for the SMEs. But even more importantly, which is really part of our, you know, requirements for our association documents, is that we need to have long-term, you know, financial sustainability. So we act, therefore, as a complementary, you know, development finance institution that bridges financing gaps that are not addressed by other financial institutions, especially in the private sector. Now, our target market, we endeavor to ensure that the underserved segments of the SME market, you know, the aspiring SMEs that lack required collateral and or equity are supported. But even more importantly, primarily black-owned and owner-managed formal SMEs. We support startups and expansionary projects in the SME sector. So unlike, you know, NEF, we are not involved in the facilitation of black economic empowerment. Of course, our support as well is biased towards underserved provinces. You know, the triangular diamond, the Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Gauteng. We are still visible in those provinces, but we want to make sure that the other areas that are underserved, the rural areas, the townships, are also impacted through our funding. Of course, even though we are providing funding between 10,000 and 3 million rand, our special emphasis is that we need to ensure that we support more and more of, you know, investments less than 1 million, especially below the 250,000 rand. Now, just the background, therefore, to our 2008 and 9 annual report is that I think once again, Kula had an unqualified audit for that particular year, and that for us is very, very important. The approvals and disbursements were affected by, like, poor economic climate and strict implementation of the National Credit Act constrains once more of the wholesale model that we articulated during our presentation on Kula Direct, which I will touch on later on, are visible in our results for the past financial year. Therefore, there is a need for recapitalization in order to effectively deliver on our mandate. I think it is important for me to mention to the honorable members that since 2002, Kula has never had money brought in by the shareholder. We have been utilizing, you know, the returns that we are getting on the investments that we are doing. So there isn't really any major capitalization that has happened since 2002. Much has happened, of course, since the end of the reporting period, which is 31 March, and I just want to highlight some of those is that we have gone on a very deliberate, you know, strategy to make sure that we restructure our regional offices to ensure that they are no more just pure call centers, but they can also help in deal origination in addressing the needs of the SMEs, and that has actually been finalized. There has also been progress on the development of the Kula Direct business model, which I will touch on later in my presentation. The implementation of the marketing strategy has commenced. Many of the members may have seen both in print and electronic media some of our advertisements that have come through, and we are indeed visible out there so that we can make the impact that is required. Therefore, what were the highlights of 2008 and 2009? Firstly, the approvals and disbursements, as I said, were affected by the, you know, the poor economic climate, and of course the NCA, we have seen that coming very strongly, especially through our intermediaries. We have seen an improvement in the number of SMEs. This become one of the performance measures that we have, in that for 2008 and 2009, 29 of businesses were actually helped as opposed to, you know, the number in the previous year. The other thing is that 52% of Kula funding was allocated to black businesses. We have got a target that we set to say these are deliberate things that we need to, you know, meet, and for every one of them we measure that accordingly. The other one is the 36% funding went to underserved provinces and areas. This would include your townships in Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, but the provinces specifically are the six outside of Gauteng, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. 4% went to women-owned businesses. 31% of loans were those that were below the 250,000, you know, per transaction. And once more, there is greater emphasis in ensuring that we support entrepreneurs that are coming for loans that are between 250 and lower. Once again, overheads were kept in check. I think it is important to mention that Kula has always funded its own overhead. And again, no capitalization since 2002, but we have managed to ensure that we fund our own overhead. What are then the operational results? One can see that during the 2007, you know, because of the boom and so on, we have seen a decline. And this is due to a number of reasons. I mean, remember, we are dependent on third parties to actually, you know, make these loans to businesses. So the private sector, due to, you know, the squeeze, due to the taps that have been closed, we have actually seen more loans not being approved due to their appetite for risk. The credit indemnity book that we use through the commercial banks, one can see that it is on a decline. And this is really the gross, you know, book. It is dependent, as I say, on the lending policies of banks, focused on higher, less risky end of the SME. We are finding more and more that those people that would have in any case got money, actually people want to utilize the Kula indemnity guarantee. And therefore the growth prospect in this particular, you know, channel is limited. The business loans to the RFIs, we can see that the cumulative, you know, book has actually grown over time. Sustained network growth in the business loans requires more direct involvement by Kula. We have put emphasis
ensuring that there is aftercare so that we look at these RFIs during these times of challenges. Economies of scale, of course, is required for us to make more impact. I just want to quickly go through the financial results. You can see our revenue, you know, for the company, for the group, that we have had a growth. And once more, we are continuing to show a surplus with the capital base of Kula having grown, you know, from, you know, the previous year of 1.2 to about 1.3 billion. Now, just going through them, the group surplus for the year, 28.1 million, and a decrease of 25.2 compared to the previous year. And of course, this is primarily due to what I will talk about, which are the impairments or bad debt provisions. Revenue grew by 7.9, with more noticeable growth, of course, of 19.7 in its core revenue and on business loans and activities. Kula primarily relies on interest that is paid on the loans that they are advancing, and we have seen a growth of approximately 20 million rand. However, the group could not escape the effects of the worldwide economic slump that is experienced in the previous year. And the bad debt provision increased from, you know, 9.19 in 2008 to about 17.4 this past financial year. Continuing again on the financial result is that the increase in interest rates during the first half of last year, I mean, we have seen a reduction of about, you know, 550 basis points. That has positive effect, obviously, on the business income, as I mentioned, that we rely totally on interest paid on the loans that we advance. The Kula advances and investments are primarily structured around interest-bearing debt, which is linked and influenced by the prime lending rate. The 68% growth that we saw in interest revenue, you know, that can be directly attributable to the increased loan book that we have seen cumulatively over the years at the growth of 51%. And the group social loan indemnity and equity book registered an increase as well of 12%. The general funding requirements for the year amounted to about 272 million, which was used to fund the following: core business activities of around 238 million, the capital expenditure and operational needs of 33 million, and potential commitments in respect of the core business activities that would have to be funded. You know, this amounted to roughly 630 million. The strategy implementation to ensure sustainability going forward is that we as Kula, I mean, are based on the performance requirements that are determined by our shareholders. Kula's corporate performance indicators reflect its strategic goals, and the key performance areas that were set for the past financial year were the SME financing activities, the brand value. We need to make sure that customers more and more really can start being satisfied and we can focus on them, and of course the human capital. We need to make sure that the attrition rates are actually reduced, the financial sustainability and process optimization to ensure, you know, a turnaround time. During the year under review, Kula exceeded all its key performance targets from the SME financing activities. And I think it is important to emphasize once more that key to the success of Kula is that we need to be adequately capitalized for what we are expected to do. I am not going to go through the success stories. I think you have got that in your text, but we just wanted to show you some of the businesses that we actually funded. And these are really ordinary people that are saying the stories that they are saying about Kula, and we believe, therefore, that people's lives are changed. So let me just quickly go through those lines, if it is okay with you. But I think people can indeed go through those stories that people are telling as well. Therefore, if you allow me, Chair, let me go on to the Kula Direct lending model just to give you an update on where we are. We, once more, I think it's important request the indulgence of this committee that we are hard working on Kula Direct, and therefore it is important that it be noted that we will come back at an appropriate time to make sure that we give full report on this particular model. And I'm going to share on some of the visions that we believe will, you know, achieve through this, is that we need to deliver financial products that meet the needs of the SMEs entrepreneurs. I think it is important for us to understand what is it that entrepreneurs are asking for. Accessibility, very, very important. We need to go deep into the rural areas, have deep penetration models to make sure that we are reaching the people that for no, I mean, for others, they are not in a position to come, you know, into the cities. And I think we need to have, therefore, a very deep penetration model at community level. The other very important thing that we have also included is that there is a need, once more, for our people for that face-to-face interaction. Our people want to see people across the desk, make sure that they can engage with them. So we need to market Kula effectively, know our customers, and of course the issue of deal origination and assessment. That needs to be quicker, but we need to use our regional infrastructure to make sure that we can get as many, you know, transactions as possible. And of course the other issue is money should be dispersed into the economy so that the economy can work. And of course, most important is the issue of post-investment monitoring. That for us is very key in what we intend doing. And of course, lastly, the issue of, you know, collections as well. Ease of use of, you know, and the fast turnaround time. I think one of the disadvantages always is the issue of turnaround. And we believe that it is important for us to give an indication to entrepreneurs as quickly as possible on what we have done. Let it rather be upon them to deliver whatever that we need from the conditions precedent. But once more, sustainable operations should be ensured in this particular model. And a project team is fully operational, working on this, and the success of Kula Direct, we believe it is totally, totally dependent on Kula being recapitalized. And this is the basis upon which we are pushing this model, because this committee and parliament approves the business case to say we will recapitalize Kula so that they can carry out its mandate. I just thought we should share with you on a high level the project plan and in terms of where we are. There is going to be an element of local research. We believe we need to have focus groups in most of the provinces so that we understand fully what is it that the, you know, the clients out there are looking for. The fact of the matter is the 250,000 and lower is not well, you know, catered for. And we need to understand what are the impediments, what are the challenges. Stakeholder engagement is important. We need to engage with our COTI members to make sure that we remove duplicates. But even more importantly, is, you know, we need to talk to some of our JV partners so that we are not seen to be stepping on each other's toes. One very important thing is the issue of product development. We need to develop our products that are easy for the clients that we actually intend, you know, servicing. And the benchmarking exercise where we are looking at similar models, you know, across the world, looking at Mexico, looking at Brazil, looking at, you know, Bangladesh and other models, so that we can take some of the lessons specifically operational, because in terms of research information readily available, but operational on the ground, how are they actually implementing their models? Of course, IT remains central to us being effective in ensuring that we deliver the right product, we respond quickly, and we have the data that we need. And of course, finally, we need to build a financial model which will enable us, firstly, to have our board approval, our shareholder, before we actually go to National Treasury for money. Research, this high-level research is where we collect information and make sure that the benchmarking, as I say, is made from the available information as well. And the design. It is important for us to realize that product be designed prior to one creator writing the business plan. And this is what we intend doing. And thereafter, we then will make sure that we develop, you know, that particular model that will culminate into us going into what we call phase one or what we call a pilot. And then post the pilot, we will then make sure that we implement, and that will go hand in hand with the review to pick whatever that we actually may need to pick. The next step, therefore, just from the slide that I have shown, is the understanding of the SME financial needs through the focus groups, research on the local experience through other institutions that are already in this sector, develop products, credit risk modeling, very, very important. We need to make sure that we, our level of appetite definitely cannot be the same as the commercial banks, as an instance, for instance, international study loans, I mean, so for benchmarking, and then the RFI strategy. When we came here in June, we mentioned the fact that one of our rolling models is that we need to look at acquiring and even taking majority stakes in some of the current intermediaries who totally depend currently on Kula to capitalize them from time to time. The Kula branch model for distribution. I think it is going to be important to make sure that distribution networks are available at levels where our end beneficiaries can access them. And as I mentioned, the systems development, state-owned enterprises partnerships. We believe that with the 787 billion rand that has been mentioned during the State of Nation address, that we need to collaborate with state-owned enterprises on their spend towards SMEs and make sure that Kula becomes a funder of choice to ensure that the procurement opportunities made available are actually achieved by these people. And therefore, there is a need for us to closely partner with those state-owned enterprises. Our last concluding remarks is that focus has been on increasing outreach and impact while ensuring that we manage risk adequately. We need to take bolder investment steps in order to ensure that we sustain the momentum that we have created through the current wholesale model. Strong delivery platform is required, and we believe that that can be built to ensure that we increase access, you know, to finance by the small and medium enterprise sector. Much has happened since the end of the reporting period, as I mentioned, and this will ensure that when we roll out the Kula Direct model, our regional offices become a conduit that we use to make sure that we reach our people. And then we'll ensure that we also originate deals through those provincial offices. Progress has been made, as I said, on the development of Kula Direct business model, and the wholesale model will continue to be a constraint. And therefore, Kula Direct, we believe, will ensure that RIPRIP is brought to Kula in order to reach the underserved market, which is below 250,000, even though we will provide a suite of products between 10,000 and 3 million rand. Kula needs to be recapitalized. I think I cannot overemphasize that. But I think it is important as well that this honorable, you know, honorable members must realize that we have not been recapitalized for the past, you know, 8 years or so. Yet we have remained sustainable, ensured that the money that we get back, we reinvest, make sure that we can grow this particular SME sector. And as I mentioned, we request the indulgence of the committee so that we can come back with a fully fledged, you know, business plan that we believe would be the best thing, you know, that can ever happen. And I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Molefe. Your input has been quite insightful and helpful. Honorable, it's time for questions now. I see a hand from Honorable Ambrosini, followed by Honorable Mabas. Oh, Honorable Marais, first. Well, you'll be there. Honorable Line, and then Honorable.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I ran out of indulgence. Forgive me. We are told here that we will be given a business plan on Kula Daray the next time around, which is what we were told the last time around. We heard here today a misstatement that Parliament has approved the going rate, when in fact our report approved by Parliament very clearly states that we want to have a report on the funding option before we approve it. So we haven't approved it, they've gone ahead, they've got a pretty advertisement out there, they're committing the country to something which has not been approved. And the report of Parliament is very clear. In the discussions we have, we put a very clear question. In this business model, which we haven't seen, will it be sustainable? Will it be self-financing? And they came and they said, yes, don't worry, it's going to be self-financing. We want to have $1.7 billion. It is going to be one stop, and we are not coming back to you again. Then the question was put to them. If it is self-financing, and you're sure of it, why are you coming to us? Go to the commercial sector. Do it with a joint venture with some of the very banks which are going to offer their services and their offices to make Kula Direct work. And their answer was, yes, we could do it, but it's not really the best thing, it's not convenient. It's an option, but we don't want to have it. Today they tell us that the only option is recapitalization. And this committee, this parliament, has been blindfolded of not having this business plan and having been drawn into approving 1.7 billion grants of our money into something that we don't know what basis is meant to work. There is the International Finance Corporation, there is the World Bank. They go into these ventures exactly without coming to ask for money. And that will need to be explored as some of the options before we get the ball rolling. That's my point I would like to recommend. The second point is that, as I spoke when the National Parliament Fund was here, I just cannot understand why there are two entities. It stands to reason for them to merge. They both work on SMEs, the provider sent service, the NEF has already gone direct. It's a matter of expanding the structure and reducing the cost to the taxpayer. Then the third question on this annual report, which is beautiful indeed, I would like to know how many copies have been printed and how much of my money went into printing. How much did this cost to the taxpayers? I mean, it's 15 of its pages are dedicated to portraying pictures of the executive, and the rest could have been condensed, the other 119 pages could have been condensed in about 20 pages of A3 stapled together. I mean, it's not what I expect our money to be used on. So I would really like to know how many copies I'm asking to cost.
I think before we go any further, I just would like you, Honorable Ambrosini, you are referring to a report of this committee regarding Kula Direct. Can you refer me which the report are you talking about? The report of this committee.
Oh, the one adopted by Parliament, Mr. Chairman. The one we drafted, actually, I think, in this very room.
Can I sort out something before we go any further? Historically, the concept of Kula Direct was approved by the cabinet. The cabinet, the executive. And thereafter, it was, or along the way, just brought to this parliament as a matter of practice for us also to have an input. We endorse the concept. Now, come the first parliament, Kula, another office, the Department of Trade and Industry, proceeds with the Kula Direct concept to higher levels. In other words, they start looking at the strategy, the business plan, and all the work. And my understanding, I'm looking at Kula,
think we need to see the exact record, because And at this stage in time, maybe I think we need to be clear as parties as to where we are. Because from the African National Congress, very, very clear, we have approved the concept of Kula Direct. Because all along these years, with all its ups and downs, with all the pressure that has been put upon Kula, at the end of the day, they brought the concept of Kula Direct, and it was not. I just want us to be very, very clear on that. And sometimes I sense that there seems to be a certain way of saying that we must reverse Kula, and please be very clear. Kula Direct is not going to be reversed. As to whether the Kula finance is slow on it, on bringing the business plan, that's for them to respond on. What was the second person?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, but you're debating with me from the chair, which I need to take exception to. And secondly, the statement you made with all due respect that do not reflect the record, at least of this parliament in which I participated, and I requested the report to be brought to the floor. I will not speak to what happened at cabinet level, but I may speak to those today which has been taken place in this committee in which I participated. It was very clear that in the debate we had here that the approval was in principle subject to a business plan, and the report reads that before this parliament gives its approval, required or not required as it may be, and you might be right that we don't have a say on the matter, but in terms of doing whatever we have to do, as perfunctory as it may be, there was a notion of asking for funding options and alternatives, which was part of our report. And I don't know, frankly, what it is that we have approved. There is no business plan. It's a concept, but the concept has been rolled out. But I don't want to engage with you on a debate on the chair. I just want to put the question and clarify my question.
Honorable Toro, welcome.
Yes, thank you. I just want to try and help about this issue. Indeed, for some years, this committee was in favor of Kula Direct. This has been going on for some years, and there was resistance from the cabinet for a long time. But the situation did change, and I can't give you the date. And we were given a report probably about a year or two ago that the cabinet was considering. But in order not to have a lot of cross discussion, Chair, I would suggest it would be a good idea for someone to look at the record, because one does get confused over time, and see exactly what Cabinet agreed to, what Kula reported to us on this matter, and whatever decisions this committee has taken more recently. But I do want to support you insofar as over the years, now I'm talking quite a few years, Kula was very frustrated by the wholesale model, and was under the previous chief, Paula, I forget his surname, there was a lot of discussion about that they were frustrated because they wanted, the banks were not cooperating enough, and therefore they wanted to go direct, but there was the resistance from the captain. Now, apparently that changed at some stage, and I think in order not to have any arguments about what the record says, I think someone should look at the record, what the cabinet resolved to do, what this committee finally recorded in its findings, in its report, so that we have clarity. I think that would maybe help us go forward.
Thank you, Professor Turok. Can you agree on this? There is Mr. Roj Naidu. Get us obviously through the department, get us the cabinet position on Kula Direct. And on my left is Ms. Marco Helling. She can draw the record of what we decided on with regards to Kula Direct. We then dispense with that. Now, who was on the second on the line? Yes, Honorable Mare.
Mr. Chair, I was second, but now it seems like I'm third. So, just for that correction.
The floor is yours there, Honourable.
Thank you, sir. I
to say that I think CUDA has got the potential to give provide a fantastic service. And again, the concept of CUDA Direct might be fantastic, and I think the way that it has been pictured to us looks like a very good idea. But what is the saying? Talk is cheap, but it's money that buys the whiskey. Now, obviously you can say anything. You can even put anything on paper. But how will it be implemented? And without a proper business plan, with all due respect, a concept is something that you must agree on before you can really proceed with business plans and everything that comes with that. But there I want to agree with Honorable Ambrosini against the chair that really, I mean, if we as a committee have taken a specific point of view, I think that is not to say that we are against CUDA Direct, but surely, and even if the ANC decides that has got nothing to do with this committee. I don't think that the chairperson can, as the chairperson of this committee, can view the point of the ANC. I think then you are reading this procedure of Parliament incorrectly as the chairperson. I take exception to that, because this is a committee activity, and we've had a committee report, not an ANC report, but a committee report. And if something is in that committee report, it's irrespective of what the ANC or the DA or whoever said, that it's our report. Just want to set that record straight, because I don't think that is fair from your side, sir. I know you're not an experienced chairperson, but you are in that position now. But in terms of CUDA Direct, nowhere in the business world you can do anything without a final business plan. You can work with concepts, most surely that's an accepted practice. But without something that eventually tells me that this is what we're going to need, this is how much we're asking from you, this is how we're going to invest this money, and this is how returns going to be in terms of money, but also in terms of economic activity and generating decent jobs, or so-called decent jobs, but sustainable jobs, and entrepreneurship and that. Without that, this is all talk. This is all cheap talk. And really, I mean, I'm not against CUDA, but we must stop with cheap talk. And really get to grips and do the job. Without that, it means nothing. It means nothing. Then we're patting ourselves on the back, and we feel happy, and we're going to bed tonight, irrespective of what the effect of that will be. And you might wake up one morning and suddenly realize, my goodness, what has happened? I thought it was going to be a very nice day, and now it's a very bad day. That is bad. That's bad management. And I hope that is not what CUDA's future is going to hold in. I've got huge hopes for CUDA, but not in that direction, hopefully not. And hopefully there will be a turnaround. There may be a misinterpretation or miscommunication with regards to that. But I can assure you, within this Parliament, even if the ANC on their majority decides to approve it in Parliament, we and the business sector and the private sector will certainly oppose anything that is just unsustainable and just money down the drain. If it's not going to generate economic growth and prosperity and opportunities for people, then it's just for jobs for belts and for a couple of people to earn huge salaries. On the basis of salaries, I've looked through it, the report, I've seen what the directors and executive director is earning. I don't see the other executive staff, CFO, COO, what they are earning. Maybe you can just direct me to that page. Then another point you have mentioned here in terms of your employment equity. I wonder whether you feel very proud that you've only got one disabled person in employment. You've mentioned it here, and it's wonderful that you are honest about that. But I want to hear from you. Do you feel that you have done your job now with regards to employment of disability, people with disabilities? And is it your view that a disabled person is only good enough for a general staff? And what are you going to do to change that. I mean, people are talking about transformation. Transformation is not only about race. It's about representativity of people with disabilities as well. And it seems like people don't think about that, so they don't worry about that. So let them be marginalized because they can't speak for themselves. You know, what are you going to do about that? Then the other thing that I want to ask on your bad debt that you've mentioned there, the increase in bad debts, the provisions, and also your debt to equity ratio, which in itself on a year basis is not that high still, but the increase in that figure is obviously alarming. And what has resulted to that, and what are you going to do, or what is in plan? Are you going to manage that and try to correct that? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honorable. I'm glad you're representing this. At least you know where I stand as well. Yes.
Thank you, colleague Chair. I think we should follow the view that has been proposed by Honorable Member Turok, because we don't need to argue about points that will have been recorded. So that's the one point. But then we must also then move to a point. If we look at the last slide 29, the fifth bullet, the fourth bullet sub 2 there says progress has been made on the development of the Kula Direct business model, which means that Kula is reporting to us that it has made that progress, you know, for us to note. But then they also then say Kula Direct does need to be recapitalized. So that these are the facts that they are placing before us. But the fact is also that they are still in the process of developing developing the business model. You know, they state that themselves. So, but then let me go to other areas. Because we must also ask ourselves and see what informed the establishment of Kula. And the answers will then lie in the areas of closing the inequity that exists in the country in its various forms. So that we should then move into an area of saying where SMME numbers have increased, as was reported, and that was seen as a success. The question is, what are the outcomes? How are the outcomes? Or that success, how is it measured so that Kula comes to saying it is a success? So if that can be substantiated on. Then I want to ask two specific areas that in the people that get helped, what is the fraction or what is the percentage or the quantity of cooperatives there? And at the same time, agriculture, especially for the emerging black farmers, noting that we also have agriculture as a department, but what role is Kula playing there in as far as funding those areas? But my biggest one is that where enterprises have been started with the help of Kula, what support disadvantaged. So that in proportion, that's where we need to give more support. And the cost of such support, you know, how is it? How is it? Let me then move to the areas, the rural area. Kula does mention that it needs to go and penetrate such areas. But since Kula has been in existence for quite some time, can you elaborate on that, on how well have you done in terms of assisting in the rural areas? But as for the part that makes us as a committee to speak about, to argue about the positions of our organizations and to speak emotionally, I think let's desist from doing that and be guided by a documentation that has thus far been recorded, so that we then take things from there. But the reality is that we do have Kula, and we expect Kula to deliver. And where we need to support it, they need to articulate which areas should we support them in. But as a committee, we also have a responsibility to make sure that whatever Kula does, it accounts properly for that. Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Honorable Line.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, my question is based on slide 27. There are many project plans high level. What does this high level mean? Does it mean towards implementation stage or highly skilled personnel are required? If so, did Kula outsource these skills? And my second question are there any evaluation mechanisms in place to ensure success or rather progress of the Kula direct business model from face to face? Thank you, sir.
Honorable Pandava Sazen.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson. Acting Chairperson, I have questions on basically two separate issues. The one issue is the bad attendance of some directors of director meetings. I see there is a member, I don't know if it's a Mr. or Mrs. Mashia, who's not attended any meetings of either the committees or the board itself. And there are a few others as well. A lady who towards the end of the year resigned. Lady Lala Mohan, maybe a male as well, man. And then Mr. Tsungu, who has only attended one third of the meetings that he or she was supposed to attend. Now, I understand it that government is the sole shareholder, and therefore government is responsible for the appointment of the board of directors. If we say government is it the Minister of Trade and Industry, or who appoints these directors, and who is it then that should take the responsibility that these directors fulfill their duties? Then also, I want to know if these directors that have not attended any meetings, have they received any emoluments for the year ending in March of this year? Then on the other hand, if you could go to slide number 14 of your presentation, I need some clarity there. Perhaps it could be, slide 14 could be thrown on the screen as well. You say that and a book growth of 51%, and the previous year the book growth was 71%. Is that the loan book? And if that is so, can you just perhaps bring that in relation to the
figures in the annual statement, as I don't seem to be able to find the link between the two. But then also I see, and this here, I want to link on to my colleague, Marais, Honorable Marais' question regarding the 17% provision for bad debts. We've just heard from the NEF that small enterprises at this stage are dying at the rate of 50%. Now, I know sometimes there are some assets that that you can recoup. Are you happy that the 17% on this fast-growing loan book of yours, that represents a realistic figure? Or must the 17% actually be seen against the smaller amounts that were made available in the previous years? Thank you.
Professor Turok?
Yes, Chair, I'd just like to make two points. The first one is all decisions by this committee in the past were unanimous, and there were no differences on the stance the committee took on the question of Kula, Direct, etc. So I don't recall a single occasion when there were differences across party lines. We were driven by the objective conditions, and the committee took a view on the basis of the facts and et cetera. But the second point I want to make, Chair, is a bit of an anecdote, if I may. I was invited to the Commonwealth Parliamentary Conference, which took place this week in Arusha, Tanzania, and I took the opportunity to go into the rural areas because I used to live in Tanzania and I know the country and I wanted to see what was going on. And if you compare the peri-urban areas in Tanzania with the peri-urban areas in South Africa, it's two different continents. In Tanzania, the scale of small enterprise is huge. Everywhere you go, you will see in everywhere a house with a small shop in front. Everybody is doing business of some kind or other. Everywhere you go, there are small enterprises. Sometimes one person, one family, etc., you know, with one employee, everywhere. In South Africa, you don't find that kind of thing at all. Of course, the reason for that is historic. Black people were not allowed to trade and so on and so on. And so in our rural areas and the townships, you don't have the same size thing. But the point is that there is now international recognition that you need small enterprises in developing countries, and you need it badly, because that's where you have income generation, that's where you have job creation, that's where you have training. If you look in Tanzania, which is a very poor country compared to South Africa, and very underdeveloped compared to South Africa, there are people in the peri-urban areas and the rural areas who are making furniture, who are doing welding, who are fixing bicycles, doing all kinds of things. So, the point is this, that I think we are playing around with this Kula business. And I think we have said to the DTI on many occasions, please take small enterprise much more, much, much more seriously. I don't want to get into the debate about the bookkeeping of Kula. I think we really waste a lot of energy, although we do need to supervise that. But the central issue, Chair, is one which has been before us for some time. That the DTI is not taking the promotion of small enterprise seriously. This Kula thing, if you look at the scale, is minute. And let us learn from our poor brothers in Africa who are doing better than we are with small enterprise, with rural development, and creating incomes. We talk about sustainable livelihoods. Our people do not have sustainable livelihoods. And the state, I'm agreed with my friend here, Ambrosini, that maybe we should look worldwide for support and so on. Why not? Why not? But we still have, as a committee, have a social and an economic responsibility that our people should be working, should have livelihoods, and should be entrepreneurs, the way our Tanzanian brothers and sisters are. So, you know, let's raise our sights a little bit above the petty 1 million here and 1 million there. It won't help our people. But nevertheless, I think the books must be examined, and we must hold the Kula to account for what they're doing. I'm not against that. Chair, I just wanted to say, let's, as a committee, also look at the bigger picture. Thanks.
Thank you, Professor Turok. Over to Kula.
Thank you, honorable members. I have got colleagues here, and the way that we will answer the questions is that I will take the first one by Honorable Ambrosini, and then Tracy, our CFO, will look at the one from Mr. Marais. The operational one, our CEO will look at that from Mr. Mabaso. And then we'll also ask our chairperson and the deputy just to help us on the board members one so that we can cover all the areas. Firstly, indeed, I think as honorable member mentioned, we do not really want to come here with cheap talk about the fact that this Kula Direct will be sustainable. And if therefore I'm allowed on the Kula Direct, we want to come back to this committee and indeed give this oversight committee the opportunity to interrogate that particular business plan, and so that we can get meaningful input into what we may have done wrong and what obviously we need to improve. And maybe let me leave it at that. The issue of, and I will also give to Mr. Mkhize just to touch on that, but maybe if I just finish on that, is that the recapitalization that we are talking about is that Kula currently operates a wholesale model. And we are saying it is becoming difficult for us to continue committing when we know that the cash at hand and all what we have, if technically people were to ask that money to be dispersed tomorrow, that we will not be able to honor those commitments. And that is from that point of view to say, Kula needs to still continue operating the wholesale model. And therefore, from that point of view, we are saying, if since 2002, Kula has shown to be sustainable in that they have continuously funded the business needs, we surely are not really asking much, just to make sure that we can continue supporting the needs that are increasing every day as we listen to the honorable members about what people are going through out there. The issue of the measure, I will not talk about MES and Kula. The copies that were made, Parliament requested us to make to print 600 copies. For Parliament, plus the additional ones that are required by our shareholder, the Department of Trade and Industry and National Treasury. We are required from time to time to come back and respond on that total number one, all the departments have actually been given, you know, all their copies. And we assure this committee as well that we will indeed make sure that, you know, those costs are within what was actually budgeted for. And thank you for the comments, Honorable Ambrosini. We'll indeed make sure that we, you know, condemn this report in the coming day. And I'll give over to Deputy Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I just want to add on what our CEO has commented on. And in my response, I am not going to direct the response to a specific member's question. I'm just going to cut through the questions in support. On the business plan and the last presentation which took place in June, what has happened, or the approach that has been taken, is to avoid or to engage more the community on the step that we're taking, because it is part of the big plan, and I'm glad that we get into that picture. We also having comment that we must stop now talking about things, but we must start implement them. And also the picture of really getting into the big plan. And when we do that, they think that we need to work together as part. Other option would have been taken to come say with a finish this plan without any looking at the options, as one of the honorable members said, let's revisit other options of financing, look at the well support within other institutions. So what does that say? Here's June, then July, August. Yes, the procurement process went through to say create a project team that will produce a business plan. That has gone through the normal supply chain procedure that needs to happen. It's a very strong team and is working on a weekly basis onto that plan. And that plan was then projected. So what we're saying now is that the project is done and the business plan is done in a much more interrogative manner. And again, it's not just taking as a top desk application done by executives that are busy running other things. The team dedicated to this business plan. But we felt as well that it is a serious decision and it's a big approach into not take it lightly, that we need to have a huge impact. Like the cases that are making a case study within Africa and Tanzania, and we can quote so many of them that are happening in other developing countries that were not quite measuring well, but we took that quite seriously. So what is happening is that the pages that are referring to the high-level business plan, it's a projection that says in 2009, which is the slide number 29, this is what will be happening. That research and the design and development is exactly talking to say, are we going to look at other cases that are happening worldwide as options for finance? And that is then we have exactly those elements. So the process is not waited, but because of its nature, it's going to happen. And then if you go back again to project plan, which is page 26, it talks about it in months. Now this is week one, which is October. Those local research and stakeholder engagement, those are part of the business plan that is already, in other words, within your business plan, you have those sessions that are already talking about that, November, December. It says by December, we have the financial model on the 9th of December that will be there in place. So this is much more an engaging process that says, let's all be part of this and this is what's happening. But we have not stopped and it is happening. And this is only 3 months after the presentation from CULA took place in here. On the rural areas, CULA has been involved in the rural areas long before. Now, the presentation was focusing on saying this is what we are doing going forward. Probably how we presented, we are saying that we believe that the members in the last presentation, they did mention some of the rural areas that we need to have more focus on them. So definitely CULA has been involved into focusing on rural areas. And our KIS, which is CULA, institutional support, has that element of supporting and following up in the projects that we have funded. And we will notice again that in those rural areas, there is a strong agriculture element in it, and it's really emerging black farmers. The document also does highlight in that division that is talking about agriculture. And the other one again is that, indeed, when you look at the agriculture and rural development, that's where the cooperatives. The beauty is that they're already being established and they are structured. We are utilizing those cooperatives as part of our process of making sure that we are using our emerging contractors to be involved in accessing finance. I thank you.
Investment to the various sectors of the economy in terms of do a research to look at the impact. And we did a study in 2007 and another one in June, where we just looked at the impact that Kula has had through the various interventions. And the study was done in Gauteng, and it showed that, you know, over the last 5 years, Kula created in Gauteng alone 8,000 jobs with the platforms that the focus area defined. And it also shows that in addition to that, there was growth in terms of the revenues of those businesses and the profitability of those businesses. And it also indicated that the cost per job that has been is for every 100,000, less than 100,000 rand, you create a job, which then talks to the small business. So in this year, what we then need to do is to replicate that study to look at the impact, and not just the figures that we rely upon and approval from our partners to see how many jobs they will create and the like, but just to go back and look at the evidence in terms of the impact. So that is what we're doing in that area. In terms of agriculture, we have a product which is the Learning, Reform and Farming Facility, and it's aimed at assisting emerging farmers to participate in the agricultural space through acquisition of land and production input. We have also signed one of the intermediaries through the Matisa program, where we have a portfolio of intermediaries to assist with production input, especially for emerging farmers. Then in terms of the support that we provide to the SMEs, it's twofold. One is in terms of the consent development. And we're in discussions with CLIP, because we also view that CLIP has been set up to do that, that they do the response, because that's what they've been set up to, and we believe that they should do that. But from our side, is to then provide support post the investment. And with our credit indemnity product, because at the time when it was established, the bank felt that the nature of the business is in high risk, there needs to be some level of intervention that is provided for them to support the team. So we have a mentorship program for every credit indemnity that is granted, Kula then pays for the mentorship service. And we're using advisors to do that, and we just monitor how they do that. And the cost thereof, you know, would depend on the nature of the intervention and the length and the complexity of that particular SME. And our regional offices are geared up to be able to do that. Then in terms of rural development, what we're doing in that space, we have set up a fund with MIGA, which is the Ngomaran Economic Growth Agency. We see that where each participating institution has a total fund size of about 16 million rand to assist with some of the ANC projects in the province. We're in discussion with LIMDEF. We're also speaking to the ANC office in KZN through the HMI initiative to see what role we can play in that space. In the Eastern Cape, we have a fund with the Department of Public Works to assist some of the contractors that have been awarded tenders, which are in need of financing. And the type of you know, projects that we do there are, you know, building of schools, clinics, you know, housing projects. So those are level of interventions that we're having on a sector rural level. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to respond to some of the financial questions that were raised. First is about the bad debt, the increase there in, and how it's managed and programmed. I think our sentiment is similar to what the NES has raised, and that we have been in a similar position. However, at this stage, we believe our provisions are adequate. There's nothing that indicates that we have to increase them. That they've increased substantially over the last period is true, and it's as per the economic slump that we've had.
we've acknowledged that things aren't as good as what they were in the past, and we've set up our systems in terms of monitoring, ensuring that we are managing the risk. So we strengthen those areas of our business, fully knowing that, you know, things can even still get worse. However, at this stage, we believe it is adequate, and indications are that, you know, our type of customers will suffer longer than most of the bigger companies, and that it will take longer for them to recover and to come out of the economic slump. So we are aware, but we are currently happy with the level of our provision. In terms of the executive salaries, those are discussed on page 117 of the annual report under note 35. If you want more detail, we will be happy to supply you with more detail on the executive salary. The question about the book growth, the 51 and the 71%, that does relate to our loan book, our business loan book, that is towards the RFI. And those figures speak to page 74 in the director's report. They are disclosed like that in our annual report. With regard to the disability and our employee state, we fully acknowledge that disabled people are part of employment equity, and we are totally committed to get more people employed with disabilities. And we make no excuses for not having many people. But although it indicates that it is general staff, this person deals with, in the call center, works directly with clients and answer questions of technical nature. So they are just classified as general staff, but this person is not the administrative person that's been tapped away. And we continue to endeavor to find people that work in technical areas with a disability rather than in an administrative position.
In terms of the unqualified headache, were there any adjustments that had to be done before you were able to get the unqualified financial audit? Also, under your highlights in slide 6, you're only looking at women-owned businesses. I trust in future you can also look at businesses that are owned by disabled people. And just as a matter of comment, the 31% of loans on those below 250,000 is rather low, and that's a satisfaction of the challenges through working on both the loans. The credit indemnity book, you know, versus the loan from the RFI, is quite an interesting comparison. It would just be helpful for the future if you could just go a little bit more in detail in terms of comparative analysis. Regarding the success story, obviously in this regard, you know, township and rural success story could go a long way to help us, you know, to have an idea as well as to how ensuring success in those areas. But one thing to just have, you know, loans, we give us loans, but also it's helpful to see, you know, successful in the hardest hit area. I repeat, in the hardest hit area, economically. Random Lepe, just a few other things, just as much of comment, could respond one way or another on that.
interacting with the provincial department is very helpful. But once upon a time, I think some time ago, through Mr. Stoller, you did indicate that you were having some joint initiative with the United Nations of Project Services, which you took pride of. So it would be that good if you could have had a cap on that. And a whole host of other partners that you might have. But a strong focus would be on the non-financial part. You are a financing institution. But obviously business is not driven by, you know, financial support only. You know, a little bit of another view on that. You know, how do you combine? You see, you do make reference to see, but it's rather more specific. You know, maybe an example. CEDA has got a component called CEDA technology. You know, to what extent it works. Particularly if you look at, you know, some of the key elements or key sectors of the industrial policy action plan, metal fabrication, as an example. Surely that's an area if you want to ensure SME support, that some of the SMEs might need technological support. I don't think it's weak, but one would assume that if you are really penetrating your market, those are some of the areas. If not, because of the constraints as well, let's see how cooler directions work on that. I'll just reinforce what Herman Buffett has said around the rural economy. The government has even established now a department dedicated to rural economic development. I trust we'll hear a little bit more around this. You know, partnerships with municipalities on local economic development in the future. There's another area. I don't think I've made any judgment. We looked at it in the past with the site and expectations and in any that of property sector. We would like to see business thriving in township, but it is a challenge of industrial parks or community markets. No more, the thing is done, but it's not doing, you cannot go into more. Some innovation must be done, especially in transport loop. And especially in transport loop, people just put the tram in the box, so even people who are able to do more. One is assumed also the first coming agricultural hub, which some provinces are handling. I'm triggering or provoking these issues, you know, things that I've observed. you can respond, but it would be helpful to see how much focus or strategy have you adopted on the property sector. Regarding the RFI, I know you'll be bringing Kula Direct, and one of the expectations there is the strategy on capacitating the RFI. Professor Turok has actually said very, very clearly that we need to take a bold step in ensuring that we are serious about SME support. And I assume one of the strategies to ensure that your national footprint extensive as possible is ensuring that you've got quite a massive and an extended, you know, RFI network throughout the country. But obviously that quality, I'm sorry, that quantity, the qualitative aspect is just as paramount if you're going to invest money to the actual ultimate beneficiary through these intermediaries. has responded. Money that is intended to help the last recipient, as a point. And then the last one, most of the industrial business areas in the townships and in the rural areas, they look like squatter camps, maybe we say squatter camps are even using a lighter weight. Because I would think that if you get closer there and your presence is spared, there's a possibility that you can even ask for interventions from municipalities if you recognize that it's an infrastructural need, etc. Like an example is the Orlando Industrial Park, there's one in Tembisa. So if there are other areas where we think your success should be measured accordingly. Thanks, colleagues. We definitely agree on looking deeper into the technological support side and looking into the industrial side of things. I believe that when it comes to working with other departments, especially, probably it also touches on our efforts to get more disabled persons now that we've got the military, honorable member of which has got an element of a disabled person. It will have to work much more closely than because then can address people at a high level of skills, also playing a meaningful role within the organization. And I was reminded by that, by the fact that again, now we have a Department of Rural Community Development that we can start to work with. With them in funding, in the project that we're working with, is by the mere fact that most of the properties that we're managing within the property portfolio that fall within our previously disadvantaged urban areas. It brings us into exactly that, where our effort has been into making a serious impact, honorable member, to remove the perception of squatters where government has got a contribution into the property industry in those areas. One good example, some of the members of our team, using the opportunity to come here, we spent some time within here in Kubuletu, in one of the schemes that are doing exactly that. The report that we got as board members, the work is going ahead, and the date of the opening is taking place in October, and that is a initiative that has been driven by Kula, and it brought also other funders in place. And we call it, it's called a local champion, which is the local champion within Kubuletu, well-respected gentleman within the community. So we already started to do those. You know, I was taking the stock that has been a squalor similar to the Tembisas of this world and the Orlando West, and doing something about them. The way that is a success, it leads us also to others to say we don't just keep them exactly as they are over the years. However, we believe that in the future we'll also start to look into other areas that are creating opportunities for the people to start engaging in the ways of creating the economy and removing our societies from being consumer societies instead of just having shopping centers where they'll spend money, but where they get engaged in creating economy by being major players in industrial participation sector, value addition within those areas, and dealing with those where the transport nodes in a different sizes, instead of being the tomato boxes lining up in long rows with a similar product, but start engaging value add or various industrial elements that could be involved in there. But we must say that we already got into that, and in October there will be a huge impact that will be seen in that area by the development that we are finalizing. The other one is also the success according to entrepreneurs funded. That is, we also follow up some of the, we also debate that within our meeting that Kula has contributed in some of the big names that we see being highlighted over there. When they reach that level, obviously they go and get much more bigger funding outside there. And some of the names, the labels that they used to talk about, Stone Age, Stone Terry, I'm not very young, certain, but labels are not close. But Stone Terry, we are glad to say to the members that it is a product that was started by an entrepreneur that was funded by Kula, and she distribute her products internationally, and they are being shared by the fashion world in the world centers, and that's part of the contribution of food. And then also some of the, in the other provinces, Itala has been over the years funded, and what they've been involved in through the funds of Kula was to jack up the industrial development between the areas of Pietermaritzburg and Devon, where the Pine Town and other areas, that when you travel along the N3, you see a huge impact. That is through creating jobs by creating large industries that are successful, not the ones that are in the squalor. So within those areas, again, in regions where the high population of unemployment, there has been contribution through Kula that has been done through our intermediaries to have an impact in the industrial sector. And I think I'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Chair.
And just to come in on the UNOPS partnership with Kula is that currently there is a 16 million fund that we are putting together between ourselves, where UNOPS will put in 4 million, Kula will put in 4 million, regional DFI will actually put in another 4 million, and what we then are doing together with the regional, you know, DFIs is to make sure that we look at local economic activities. Today, we have approved in Limpopo and also Mpumalanga. Now, the other 4 million is provided by CEDA for non-financial support. So it's 4 million Kula, 4 million UNOP, 4 million, you know, DFI in the particular province, and then of course CEDA providing non-financial. And we are going to roll this out to ensure that impact can actually, you know, be made as well. And Kulin will just talk about another agricultural initiative where Kula approved 70 million rand together with the other partners to establish in the agricultural hub in Mpumalanga, something that will also go a long way in ensuring that emerging farmers as a Pinoa health.
We have partnered with TFC in Mpumalanga to set up what we call the Kula Kwanza Fund. And that fund is targeted at emerging sugarcane growers in the area so that they can be able to supply their product to the mill in Madeline. So that's just one of the things that we do. Then in terms of the mentorship program, I think we always have this debate whether you want to outsource, or you want to do it yourself. But we have taken a view that we don't want to create a structure where you have just so many permanent people on payroll that you only utilize them when you need them. And the cost of outsourcing the service to us, it makes sense. So you pay them even when you need them, and there are no other benefits associated with keeping those people on the payroll. And what we're doing then, through our regional offices, to monitor the service that you provide to the entrepreneurs. And one of the differences that Kula prides itself in terms of its mentorship program, for instance, when we do develop business plans, we only pay, it scales. So they will pay a certain percentage up to the point where it is approved by the financial institution. And it's
not just a blanket, you know, amount that you provide to somebody who's giving you a business plan. And in that way, you control the quality of the business plan that you provide.
In terms of the audit, we had no adjustments that we had to make in order to get this unqualified credit opinion, nor were there any significant audit findings from the side of our external audit.
Okay, can I just comment a bit on your question? By profession, I'm a chartered accountant, and I was curious in terms of where your question was coming from. But generally, when there's adjustments before unqualified reports, those adjustments are normally flashed out beforehand and they're normally sorted out. That is the one thing I was curious about. But just to comment on what my colleague Tracy has said, I think a good gauge of how the financial department performed is the extent of the management data from the auditors. And surprisingly, this year, I was actually looking for it. The management report that normally tells you this is what's wrong and this is what you need to look for and this is what happened and this is what you must be careful of and so forth. And in CODA this year, there was none. Well, there was some, it was very insignificant. So from that point of view, you can be rest assured that I think we're doing a good job at CODA. Thank you very much.
As a former chair of an audit committee somewhere, I'm smiling. I know management letters. Well, honorable, you know, the reason why I'm asking you this is that yesterday, Ndadino Ndambe, AD, he gave the startling update to chair. Now, I happen to be there on behalf of our chair because he was not there. He asked me to attend. That's the reason. And I trust, honorable, that we'll make that a practice to all county members and even the department. As from now, we've got to check according to what's there. Because you get a financial report, it doesn't indicate. Because they are done internally. And Ms. Nombembe was quite concerned about that. That by the time you see an unqualified audit, there would have been numerous adjustments. Now, no financial report exposes the adjustments. What I'm appealing that let's do that as a matter of practice. Because it has an impact of what I noted there, which I forgot to read, the cost of delivery. I think as a matter of practice, we should look into the particular county agencies in future. What is the cost of delivery? What is the cost of demand? What is the cost of creating each job? The first fundamental, I mean, now we've already fixed everything. The report was just presented today, but I trust and hope in future that it will be into. A few closing points, you don't need to respond at this first. The disabled people of South Africa is actually an equally important institution that you can work with. I'm a member of them, and I know they do have a database. May not be the best. They're trying to grow it, and that could help in conjunction with the new ministry. Honorable, I think it's good that Honorable Mabaso had raised the issue of mentorship. We need to then, when we get CEDA to come and give reports at any stage in time, to ensure that we pick that up on CEDA. Because I suspect some of my folks will be doing the same thing, unlike NEF, which is doing the mentorship internally. I'm not sure, I may not be accurate. CEDA may be doing the mentorship program for a couple of friends. You know, DFI. And if that's me, which means the challenge is upon us also to be very sharp and ensure that they do their job, because non-financial support is just fundamentally equal to financial support. Can I plead when Ms. Sarojini and Ms. Mabu Helling put together the report around the Kula Direct? And decisions that it took. One of the things that they should try and get is to get the executive summary of the survey that was done, which led to the conclusion of establishing Kula Direct. Maybe you should share that.
even take a bold step and do some CD or DVD, do it electronically, and maybe hold it for someone to see. Because far as some of us know, there is a rationale and a fundamental rationale why, at the end of the day, Kula, first of all, proposed the BTI and therefore the cabinet, and therefore to us, that this is Kula. Maybe we should be real sexual. Take a step back and look into that, so that even if business comes and challenges us, as I say, we know that our effects are there. Let me congratulate as well Kula for the unqualified report, because the picture that was set up yesterday is grim. You may have seen it in the television or the head over the radio, but that's different. And I said, if you were there for the 12.5 hours, it's not a nice picture. For any institution, whether it's just a public entity, whether it's a full department, whether it's a municipality, if they've gone through a process, the member is saying there that he was looking out for even a management there and there was none. It therefore means that institution at least is trying to level best to be efficient. Let me thank everyone. Oh, sorry. The other thing which I feel that all of us as members of parliament, we should take into account when we interact with the department in particular, the issue of capitalization. When it's capitalization for Kula per se now, but also in a broader context, is capitalization for the county or some of the county institutions primarily. That's why I'm saying when we interact with the Department of Trade and Industry, which we expect to get their support in the future or in the near future, let's keep that in mind and make that our earnest homework. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members from Kula, from the department, staff, we're coming to a close now. If I can just make an announcement that next our next meeting is on Wednesday, 14th at 9:30 at G26 downstairs, where we'll be getting annual reports from SAMAP and ECIC, the insurance, private insurance group. And,
sorry, can you just repeat the time?
Oh, sorry, I was fast. 14th of October at 9:30, G26 downstairs. That's behind the plenary. That's Wednesday. And we'll be looking at annual report from SAMA and ECIC. ECIC, the credit insurance. Such a long name. Export Credit Insurance Company. Should members be keen, as a matter of practice as well, to have additional questions for Kula, can they forward them to Mr. Helling by end of the day today so that she can courteously pass them to Kula for response? I know we've gone over our target of the 12 o'clock on a Friday. Thank you very much for your perseverance. Have a nice day.